Comrades, tomorrow is the anniversary of the October Russian Revolution. Although it's called October Revolution, you might think it's funny, it's been celebrated in November, but the October Revolution refers to the old calendar, which was the event that took place on the 25th of October, which in the new calendar was the 7th of November. Trotsky's birthday, as a matter of fact, and what a great birthday present that was, he remarked. Clearly, it's an extremely important event in the 20th century, and we would say that probably it's the greatest event in history, insofar as, for the first time, the working class, the oppressed, were able to come to power, sweep out the old capitalists, the landlords, and concentrate political power in their hands and begin the transition towards socialism. And that the ideas of Marxism or socialism, which were great ideas, if you like, were now being put into practice. So you've got the Communist Manifesto on the table. That's a brilliant document, probably the most relevant piece of writing at the present moment, given the world economic crisis. But also it explains how capitalism has developed onto a world scale. It is a revolutionary system of society insofar it has developed the productive forces, developed science, technique, developed the economy to enormous extent, this development of world trade, and provides the material basis for a new society, a new higher form of society of socialism. And that Marx explained that the vehicle for this change is formed by capitalism itself, in the essence of the working class, in the form of the working class, which becomes a revolutionary class that can offer a way out. Now, that was the theory, if you like. In fact, Marx explained that the most important capitalist countries at the time were Britain, Germany, and France, and that these were where the working class had been developed the most. They were the strongest. They were the best organized in these countries. And that's where the revolution, he thought, would take place in the first essence, in the first case. But as we see, although there was a revolution in France in 1871, in the Paris Commune, where the working class came to power, it was only for a short period of time. And they lost power because of the actions of the counter-revolution. Here we have a situation in Russia in 1917 where the working class not only take power, but hold power. And nevertheless, why did it happen in a backward country? Because, you know, Marx thought it would be an advanced industrial country where the strongest working class is in existence. And Lenin explained the reason why the revolution took place in a backward country, an extremely backward country like Russia, was that capitalism broke at its weakest link in this chain, if you like, of world capitalism. And if you look at Russian society itself at that time, first of all, it was dominated by Tsar. And Tsarism was a despotic regime that had been in existence for 1,000 years. It was an extremely reactionary power which affected politics in Europe for a whole historical period. It was a very backward country on the one hand, where you had a population of just over 150 million. The vast bulk of those were peasants. That the dominant relations within Russia were feudal relations, and that the most advanced sections of society, if you like, at the time, who looked towards revolution, were attempting to overthrow Tsarism and bring Russia into the modern century, into the modern world. In fact, whereas we had revolutions, I say we, in Britain, in France, the classical bourgeois democratic revolutions, which broke up feudalism, did away with all the small regionalities, if you like, localities of feudalism, created a capitalist country and a modern economy and a modern society. In Russia, that had not taken place. There was no bourgeois democratic revolution. And one of the fundamental reasons for that was the weakness of the bourgeoisie itself. The capitalism had come very, very late to Russia. And secondly, not only was it weak and feeble, but also, I would say, counter-revolutionary, in the sense that whereas the up-and-coming bourgeois in the 18th century was a very revolutionary class, although even there it rested upon the middle class, as far as Russia was concerned, in the beginning of the 20th century, the bourgeoisie was linked to the landlords, linked to the old regime, if you like, linked to the imperialist powers, and therefore was afraid of this working class that was developing in within Russia itself. Because Russia had modern factories, it is true, concentrated, however, in Petersburg and in Moscow. And these were modern factories because they had modern capital invested in them from Germany, France, Britain, etc. And peasants, the raw material like of the peasantry was proletarianized in these massive factories. And as a result of this concentration of the working class, Lenin explained that the working class had a very open attitude, was open to revolutionary ideas itself, wasn't burdened by the traditions you had in the West, like in Britain, where the development of the working class goes back over centuries. Here, the working class was created overnight, and therefore was open to more radical and revolutionary ideas than its counterparts in the West. That's one reason why Marxism and Bolshevism had a ready-made audience, if you like, of these workers. But the revolution, or the character of the revolution that was on the cards in Russia, was a revolution to do away with Tsarism, a revolution that would bring in bourgeois relations, bring the bourgeois to power, and create a modern bourgeois state. That was the kind of tasks of the bourgeois democratic revolution. However, the bourgeoisie, who should have carried out the revolution, weren't capable of doing it. They were counter-revolutionary. They were linked to the very landlords they should be overthrowing. They were linked to the very imperialist powers they should be fighting against. So they ceased to be a revolutionary class. In fact, they were the opposite. They became a counter-revolutionary class. And the only class that existed in Russia that could play a revolutionary role was the working class itself. Although they were very small, nevertheless, because of their concentration in the factories of St. Petersburg and Moscow, they had enormous potential power. And it was the Marxists who could see this, that the Russian Marxist movement and the Russian workers' movement came into existence in the 1880s. In the 1880s, 1890s in particular, when on a world scale, the Workers' International was being created. That is the Second International in 1890. And they became big organizations in Britain and France and Germany, big mass social democratic parties. And they looked to Marxism as the real way forward. They were influenced, they became Marxist organizations. And their counterparts in Russia were very small. It was mainly amongst the intelligentsia and people like Plekhanov, who was seen as the father of Russian Marxism, organized small circles of revolutionaries to discuss Marxism in Russia. Lenin, as a young student, joined one of these particular study circles and became involved actively in the revolution. And you'd find that in different countries, is the youth, young people, who first of all draw revolutionary conclusions. And it's no different from the revolutionary movement in Russia itself. There was self-sacrificing of people, and they struggled and discussed out the ideas of Marxism and how Marxism would apply to the Russian conditions. After all, it was a backward country. It was facing a bourgeois democratic revolution. So how did Marxism fit in? And the perspectives of the revolution divided the revolutionary movement in Russia. I haven't got time to go into everything, but the movement in Russia was called the Russian Social Democratic Labour Party, that was formed in 1898 in Minsk, did its first congress there, and everybody was arrested. They were forced underground, as you would expect in an autocracy. The only way they could organise was going abroad into exile and organising revolutionary work and papers from exile and bringing them back into Russia. That's when the first Russian like movement was established. And in London, in 1900, Lenin came over together with Trotsky and a number of other Russian revolutionaries to form a newspaper called Iskra, the Spark. And Iskra's role was to unite the revolutionary movement in Russia. All these separate small groupings were united together into one party based on the ideas of Marxism. And that was the task, if you like. And that work was successfully done from in about 2 or 3 years until the second congress of the party was held in 1903. In fact, it was held in Belgium, and then they had to rush to London. Because the police closed it down. Again, they're all it's all illegal, and they had to do things in this particular way. They came from Russia and had the conference, went back into Russia itself. And there was a split that took place, and the split took place in 1903 between the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks. The Bolshevik name is Russian for majority, and the Mensheviks name is the Russian name for minority. And although at that time the differences of opinion between these two sections of the party wasn't crystal clear at all, later on they developed widening differences as to their attitude towards the revolution in Russia. And on one hand, the Mensheviks believed, look, this is a classical capitalist revolution, the workers should support the capitalists in carrying out the revolution against the Tsar. That was their position. Then afterwards, after you got this revolution, things were then later on we could fight for socialism in the dim and distant future. The Bolsheviks, on the other hand, of Lenin and particularly Trotsky as well, had the perspective, no, although this is a capitalist bourgeois democratic revolution coming, the capitalists could not lead it. They were counter-revolutionary. The only class capable of leading it was the working class. That they would lead the peasantry to carry through, for them to come to power and carry through these tasks and set up what he called the democratic dictatorship of proletariat and peasantry. Trotsky, on the other hand, had a very similar view, but he went one step further, probably more, seeing more clearly into the future than even Lenin at that time. He said, look, if the working class or the revolutionary class, they could come to power. They could win over the poor peasants. They could come to power. And once they set up a workers' government with the support also of the peasantry, they could then proceed not just to carry out the bourgeois tasks of, you know, doing away with feudal property, doing away with Tsarism, but they could then proceed and carry out socialist tasks. And that could be the spark of a world revolution. Or that was the perspective. And so Trotsky had a more clearer view than Lenin as to what way forward the revolution could go. Lenin didn't believe there'd be a socialist revolution in Russia. He said, no. Well, the only way it could come about is the revolution, a bourgeois democratic revolution, be successful and provoke in revolution in the West, which would in turn influence events in Russia itself. So one would influence the other. But it was Trotsky who said, no, I think it's clearer than that. His idea was the workers would come to power, and on the basis of that, they could carry through the socialist revolution, but it would be the beginning of the world revolution. You couldn't have socialism in one country. You certainly couldn't have socialism in backward Russia, of all countries in the world. That was not ever dreamed of by the Bolsheviks or the Russian revolutionaries. So there was this division. You had the famous 1905 revolution, which came out of the blue, where the workers, after the defeat of Russia in the Japanese war, 1905, there was an uprising of workers, which lasted basically periodically for nearly a year. It was an incredible situation. It shook the world, actually, the 1905 revolution in Russia. Even in Britain, they had meetings about the 1905 revolution, give our support to the comrades in Russia and so on, big meetings in London and elsewhere. But it was a dress rehearsal, Lenin said. Look at this, it's marvellous. The workers have played the leading role, and what did they do? They actually set up these organisations called Soviets, which basically is committees, a committee. The workers set up committees and began to run Petrograd, run delegates from the factories, and they don't know. In other words, it was like a dual power situation. The capitalist, the czarist, the czarist autocracy, and the workers were challenging, set up an alternative power. They were defeated. It's interesting to know that Trotsky became so famous in those events that he was elected as the chairman of the Petrograd Soviet. But it was a real lesson of how the workers would move in Russia and how the bourgeois would be counter-revolution, because they opposed these revolutionary movements. Moon was defeated. And when you have a defeat in Russia at that time, it was a real defeat, a real bloody defeat, which set the movement back a long period of time. They went in with boots and all. And it took until 1911, 1912, with the economic revival, you have the revival of the Social Democratic Party. In fact, in 1912, you have the split, formal split between Mensheviks and Bolsheviks. And the Bolsheviks set up themselves as a party, and they produce a newspaper called Pravda as a daily newspaper at that time. And it becomes quite a mass circulation amongst the working class. They win members to the Duma. They establish a parliamentary faction. Things seem to be on the up and up. Of course, events do not take place in the straight line, as everybody is quite aware. And this was cut across, what, by the First World War. Up until that time, the international workers' movement was passing resolution after resolution. That was the World War is declared. We will have a general strike and lay the basis for a revolution, they said. But unfortunately, in 1914, in August 1914, war was declared, and each of the Socialist Party leaderships, if you like, capitulated to their own bourgeoisie. They capitulated to their own ruling class and supported the war, supported the aims of the war. And this created an enormous crisis in the entire world socialist movement. And there was only a handful which actually came out for maintaining the banner of internationalism, of class solidarity, of international revolution. And one of those parties was the Bolshevik Party. Others, there was the Serbian Party. And other groups and other individuals throughout the world, like Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht in Germany. In Scotland, you had John McLean. In Ireland, you had James Connolly. These were like great internationalists who stood against this wall of chauvinism, of propaganda and hatred, if you like, which prepared the way for the butchery of the working class during the war in Europe and so on and so forth. And they came together, these internationalists, in 1915 at a place called Zimmerwald in Switzerland. A small little village, and they had a conference, very small conference, and Lenin was there, and he joked that, you know, go on, Mike, he said, the whole world's internationalists can be put into two small stagecoaches, because they sort of brought them up to the venue of the conference, and said that's what we've been reduced to, an incredibly tiny minority in the world scale, and the entire movement smashed, if you like, in this terrible period of war, of chauvinism, of hatred, and so on and so forth. And that was the black period, if you like, a terrible period of isolation, of not knowing what was happening, and yet. Precisely, and perhaps we should learn a little bit of a lesson of today. Today's lesson is that events change people's outlook, change their consciousness. And there's no greater events than war and world war and crisis and slump. These are part and parcel of the crisis of the capitalist system, which teaches people that capitalism is horror without end. There is no way forward. And therefore, we must change society. That is the implications of their experience under capitalism in crisis. And the First World War was no exception. In fact, many of you may have heard that in Christmas 1915, there was fraternisation on the fronts on Christmas Day, where the workers got up and said, to hell with this slaughter, and they started celebrating this occasion. And they were, that was an episode, that was a glimpse, a glimmer of the class solidarity that is there in the working class. That was suppressed, obviously, by the general staff of both sides, because they didn't want it, of course. But inside, if you like, this terror, this bloodbath, was maturing the seeds of revolution. And even Lenin didn't fully understand it. I said, because the reason why, in January 1917, he was in Switzerland and was giving a talk to the young socialists. And he said, well, you know, we old-timers won't see the revolution. It's up to you, the new generation, to take up the banner of socialism and so on and so forth. And within 1 month, the Tsarist Empire collapsed and revolution broke out in Russia, led by the working class. In fact, it was working class women on the 7th of March in the new calendar, on International Women's Day anyway, and fighting for bread, because of the war and so on and so forth, of peace. And the workers started moving. But they also followed what their traditions were in 1905. That is, the establishment of Soviets. So the Tsarism was brought down, and immediately the workers established a new alternative power to the old or the old regime. In this vacuum that existed, you had the creation of these workers' committees in Petrograd, in Moscow, and other areas, spontaneously. You know, the Bolsheviks never called them, the Mensheviks, they were spontaneously created by the working class as organs of struggle, and potentially as organs of power for the working class.